Welcome to Cookbook Club. We are home cooks from Portland, Oregon. Every month we choose a cookbook, we make lots of recipes from it, and then we get together to share some of the dishes we made. We talk about what worked, what didn't, and decide whether this is a cookbook we can't live without.
I'm Sarah Gray.
And I'm Renee Wilkinson. This week we're talking about Snacking Cakes by Yossi Arefi.
Yossi Arefi is a Brooklyn-based baker and food photographer. She's the author of two cookbooks and the baking blog Apartment 2B Baking Co. Snacking Cakes is her second cookbook and features simple one-bowl recipes for cakes of every variety that you can whip up at a moment's notice.
We are both big bakers, and this book just practically jumped off the shelf into our shopping carts. We're excited to talk more about it with you guys.
Renee, tell me what a snacking cake is.
It's funny, when I saw the name snacking cake, I didn't exactly know what the definition was, but it did conjure up a picture in my mind that seems fairly accurate. It's an easy to make, in this case, one bowl cake that you can whip up in minutes. By the time your oven is basically preheating, the cake is ready to go in the oven. And I also appreciate that in this book, she keeps the portion size really small. So usually you're making something that's the equivalent of like 1 9-inch cake.
The cool thing about the snacking cakes is the combination of easy prep and the time, for sure. I also like how little, like how few dishes it makes.
So few dishes.
You can make almost all of these with one bowl and one whisk. Sometimes you pull out a spatula just to like get all of the batter into the pan. And I suppose the pan, the cake pan too. But yeah, it's easy, easy.
Because she's a baker and a lot of bakers do their recipe ingredient list by weight. I mean, you have both the weight and the cup measurement. You can get away with really only washing measuring spoons. You don't even have to wash any measuring cups if you just do it by weight.
Always. I always do the snacking cakes by weight, and it's so easy.
I think that's a good rule of thumb, really, for any baking recipe to do it by weight. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, it just ends up more accurate, but also you don't have to wash all those measuring cups.
Yeah. So Sarah, I know you've baked from this book a lot. Why don't you tell me what things you've made?
Okay, I've made a bunch of these recipes. There's 50 recipes in the Snacking Cakes book. I've made probably a quarter of them. Sometimes we do make it as an actual snack, you know, like an afternoon snack. But I think the most genius thing that this book has given me is the ability to whip up a cake as I'm making dinner, like while my dinner is in the oven. You just whip it up and then throw it in the oven as soon as your entree comes out. It cooks while you're eating. By the time you're done eating, you can smell it. It's the perfect timing. You take it out. It's warm. You let it cool for a couple minutes and then you cut it up and you have dessert. I love that. And it's just so easy and just kind of fun.
Something that's different about this book than other cake books that I've baked from before is that the emphasis to me is really on the cake. It's not on the toppings. And so to your point, when you can whip it up and it's baking while you're eating dinner, you don't need to cool it because you don't need to frost most of these cakes. They have really simple toppings. And most of the time they benefit from no topping because the cake itself is so visually beautiful.
Very true. So yes, she does offer a lot of glaze and frosting options, but you don't need them in most cases. That's sort of like the simplest preparation, but then she dials it up. So like if you want to make a snacking cake for a fancier occasion, you can dress it up a little. And she gives you suggestions on every recipe about how to do that. Some of the cakes that I think of as being the most visually stunning are some of the fruit cakes. So there's a whole section on fruit cakes here.
And we don't mean like Christmas time
like
fruit
holiday fruit cake, right? She's got a really visually beautiful whole grain strawberry cake with a really thin layer of sliced strawberries on the top that kind of baked onto a jammy layer. There's also a beautiful double apple cake, which is an applesauce cake, and it has like shingled thin apple slices over the top. And it's just really gorgeous and really does not take much time at all to make it really, really beautiful.
I've cooked a lot of the cakes in that fruit section of this book, including the mostly apple cake, which is, I mean, great that there's more than one apple cake in this book, but it is really mostly apples with just a very small amount of batter to even hold it together.
I haven't made that one before. Is it so little batter that you wonder when you're putting it in the pan if this is going to work?
Absolutely.
It reminds me of a cake that I've made from the book Feeding a Family by Sarah Waldman, which is an apple cake. And when I made it, I was like, this cannot be right. Mm-hmm. There's not enough batter in here. It's just going to be a pile of apples. But it's like kind of a miracle. It works. Like the batter fluffs up. You know, it didn't fall apart.
Yeah,
it was mostly apples.
A similar experience for me then with this mostly apple recipe, too.
Really nice to have like just so much fruit in a cake.
and my kids don't know. They think they're eating cake. They're right. stoked. They don't realize that
and it's
actually
really moist, too. Yeah,
it's mostly just apples. Tell me about the other ones that you've made from any section of this book.
Okay, one of the best ones, I think, in this whole book is the simple sesame cake.
Oh, yeah. Talk about visually stunning.
It is so, so good. So in the book, you sprinkle sesame seeds in the bottom of the cake pan, and then you sprinkle the top as well. So it comes out of the pan. You even sprinkle the sides. So it's like the whole cake is coated in sesame seeds. In the book and in the photos, she uses white sesame seeds. If you put half black sesame seeds, it's incredible. Like, it's so beautiful. And it has tahini in the batter, which I think makes the most, like, decadently moist cake. And it's just so delicious. And it's kind of like that sesame cookie that we love from 100 Cookies by Sarah mm-hmm. Kiefer, because it's got this, like, little bit of savoriness to it because of the tahini. And it's just a little bit unusual. And I think it's awesome.
It is so fabulous. It's really great to serve to grown-ups who are going to appreciate the flavor.
Yeah, it's a complex flavor profile mm-hmm. for sure.
I think that it would pair well with any kind of topping that you wanted to prepare too. If you wanted to serve it with a slightly sweetened creme fraiche or even chocolate or something.
Yeah.
I think all of those would be great choices. But yeah, that's a beautiful cake.
I really like that one a lot. Another one that I think is really great is the corn cake with honey. It's really simple. It's got cornmeal in it and honey, and you really taste the corn and the honey. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's super, super simple. In the book, she recommends, I think, serving it with a dollop of whipped cream and some blackberries, which would be amazing. I've never gotten that far, but it's really good. And I think it's one of the sort of moister ones. Saying moist a lot in this, and it's not a word that I like.
Sometimes you just have to. We have to do what we have to do.
Yeah.
Does the corn cake keep itself firmly out of the cornbread category?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's firmly a cake. Some of those cornbreads are just not cornbread at all. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a continuum, right?
Yeah.
I heard this thing once. I don't know if it's true, that you remember Boston Market?
Yeah.
They had this cornbread that was like super, super cakey and sweet.
Uh-huh.
And somebody told me that the secret to the Boston Market cornbread was that it was half cornbread, half vanilla cake mix.
I would totally not be surprised by that.
So there's a continuum of cornbread to corn cake, but this is definitely on the sweeter, cakier side.
Okay.
It's more sweet than the Boston Market cornbread.
All of the cakes that I've made are definitely in the cake category, not like a quick bread category. But they're not too sweet, which I really appreciate.
Right.
I really love cake, but I really despise like overly sweet cakes and then like way too much frosting on top.
Right.
I mean, this is a little rant of mine in general that I feel like we have, as a culture, have just gone too far with the frosting.
Right.
Too far with the frosting and the decorations. This book just speaks to my soul as a baker.
Right.
Of
it's so simple.
Just make it about the cake, man.
And a lot of them are like complex flavors. They're not overruled by the sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I really like is the almond butter banana cake,
ooh,
which is one of those where it's like, it's almost banana bread, but it is cakier. It's like a lighter, less dense crumb to it. And so I think that's one of those things where she's taken it to the cake place instead of the quick bread place. And it's really, really yummy. And that almond butter, like you can really taste it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you taste the complex flavor of those two things working together, just like in the honey corn cake. You can taste the honey and the corn.
What a perfect combination. I
really
love that.
Nice.
I need to try that recipe.
It's very good.
I have made the buttery brown sugar pear and cranberry cake.
Oh,
ooh, it's so good. It's so good. You could make that on like Thanksgiving or Christmas or a holiday in the wintertime. It really is a perfect winter cake in general, because that's when you're going to find both the perfect pears and the perfect cranberries in season. It's a visually stunning cake. You can add nuts to the top as it's baking, which I'll do on like half of the cake for the people who are pro nut and no nuts on the other half for the anti-nut people in my house. It's just a delicious, wonderful marriage of flavors. And I would never think of that flavor combination on my own.
So that cake is from the section called Warm and Toasty Cakes, right?
I want to live in that section of the book.
I think that's my favorite section of the book, too. It's got things like the All the Spices cake, which mm-hmm. is just a really simple spice cake. She recommends putting a vanilla bean glaze on the top. It's really good. That was one of the first ones I made out of this book. And I was like, are you kidding? This is my favorite book now.
Really? From the spice cake?
That's, yeah.
I made that spice cake recipe because that's my partner's favorite cake.
Okay.
I thought it was fine, but I did love that it only called for a bowl and a whisk.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to make that again.
So easy. Another one that I made out of that section is the brown butter pecan and white chocolate cake. Mm. I'm not a big white chocolate fan in general, but my son picked it out and asked if we could make it. And it was really, it was one of those things too, where it's like, I never would have thought of this combination. And it was really nice, the pecans and the white chocolate. And then again, it was simple enough that you could really taste the brown butter. So it's like a nutty sort of undercurrent on the flavors. And again, another one of those that's so pretty on the top because it's got the pecans and the white chocolate bits on top of the cake. There's no reason to frost it.
No.
And that would overpower the flavor combination anyway.
Let's talk about chocolate. She has a whole section on chocolate cakes, which I think is fine. I'm not as big of a chocolate person, but I think the rest of the world would disagree with me and be thrilled that chocolate has its whole own section with like a dozen recipes in it.
Right. I really like chocolate cake. I'm a big chocolate person. I love it. I've not had very good luck with the chocolate cakes in this book. For some reason, they've come out all a little drier than the, like all those warm and toasty cakes with the spices and the warming, all of that. And I don't know why that is exactly. You know, I have sort of a larger criticism of this book, which is that I've had a little trouble either under or over baking a lot of them. It may come down to user error, or it may come down to I realized I had kind of a hot oven. And then I tried to sort of not go too long because I realized that they were coming out dry for me. So then I tried to pull them out a little earlier and then a bunch of them sunk in the middle. So I feel like there is like a really, like you got to hit it just right. She does give you baking ranges on this. So you do have to like kind of keep an eye on it. That's my criticism, is just that on those chocolate cakes, I think if you go even a couple minutes over, then they're going to be dry.
I have had pretty good luck with all of the chocolate cakes that I have made from this book, but I am also admittedly not a massive chocolate fan. I mean, I'm not anti-chocolate, but I'm just not like cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs when it comes to chocolate. I mean, it's not my number one top flavor. I have made the cocoa yogurt cake.
I've made that one too.
For me, that works really well. Do you put the chocolate chips in it? That's an option I think that she gives.
Don't think I have done that.
That definitely makes it a lot more chocolatey.
Okay.
Because then you get, I mean, I love that you're using yogurt to make the cake because you're adding a little bit of acid, which kind of helps with the sweetness of the chocolate. So I like that balance. And then adding chocolate chips to the mix gives you these little pockets of kind of indulgence when you're eating it. It looks really pretty frosted and topped with pistachios for a little bit of crunch and color.
Beautiful.
That recipe's worked well for me. And then the red velvet cake I've made before and thought it was delicious. It's not overly chocolatey, but I also find that red velvet cakes in general, I don't think need to be overly chocolatey.
Right. I have made the chocolate peanut butter cake.
I'm so curious how that turned out.
It was dry.
Ugh. I feel like that could happen with peanut butter because how do you carefully balance those two in a cake without the peanut butter drying it out and but then there being enough peanut butter that you can taste it?
Right. And I think I was really excited for that one because like the sesame cake that has tahini in it, this had the peanut butter right in it. And I thought this is going to be really similar texture wise to that sesame cake because of the nut butter that's in it. But either I cooked it too long or it just like the cocoa was too drying or something. I don't know. It just wasn't as good.
Well,
could be user error.
You had an oven that was running a little hot, you discovered.
Yeah.
But you don't have that oven anymore.
I know. I got rid of the oven. I'm renovating my kitchen. And right now I'm cooking in a toaster oven. And I've not been willing to give up baking altogether. So I have actually tried making a couple of these in my toaster oven and it totally works.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. You have to watch the cooking time a little bit. I've discovered on the whole, because I've been cooking in that toaster oven a lot, that things tend to cook much quicker, especially baked things. And I think it's just because the heating element is so much closer to the food because it's a smaller space. Mm-hmm. So that's been interesting. But yeah, I've made two or three of these. And they've come out really nicely.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's so conducive to that, to a stove or a convection oven or whatever of any size, because you're only putting one pan in.
It's little.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Why don't we take a quick break and then we can come back and talk more about some of our favorite recipes and also some of the gear that we figured out is best suited for this cookbook.
Dropcloth Samplers is a line of hand-drawn embroidery samplers, printed and ready for you to jump in and start stitching right away. Each pattern is hand-drawn by Rebecca Ringquist in her Portland, Oregon studio and printed for you to embroider with your own color and thread choices, like coloring book pages, but for embroidery. You can find Dropcloth Samplers on Etsy or on Instagram @dropcloth. One thing that I really like about this book is that you can make these cakes in many different shapes. An 8x8 square is one option. You can do a 9-inch round,
which is what I do every time.
You can also do a loaf pan, which works well for some of them, but I feel like the ones with the fruit laid out on top, not quite as ideal. But some of them, like the sesame cake, work really well in a loaf form. I've discovered that I really like a mini bundt pan.
Oh.
So it's like a half size bundt pan. It's little and it makes this amount of batter perfectly.
That's so cute.
And then it's cuter too.
I like that we both go straight to how cute it is. That would be adorable if it was like a really, you know, bundt pans can be really ornate too with their
right.
design, as long as you grease it really well. So mm-hmm. it all comes out in one piece and you just dust it with powdered sugar. That's a brilliant idea.
And then she also says you can double these for a sheet cake. So you can do it in a 9x13 if you double the recipe.
I've done that before with her vanilla buttermilk cake. If you have a birthday or a celebration and you're going to gather with some folks, the vanilla buttermilk cake is nothing to write home about in terms of like, oh my God, the vanilla cake, it was so indulgent and fabulous. It's a great, like, solid vanilla cake.
Yes, and I agree.
That's a great one for birthday parties.
It's sort of like a step up from a box cake.
Yeah.
So I mean, you can say it's homemade, but it's still very simple.
I would say a very big step up from a box cake because I really don't like box cakes.
I haven't had box cake in so long.
I think it just tastes like sweet and nothing.
One-dimensional.
Like, no texture.
Yeah. Okay. I take that back. It's much better.
Sorry if I've just offended all kinds of people who love box cakes. I have heard that Trader Joe's has a really good vanilla box cake mix, which I have not tried before.
I think their box mixes are generally pretty good. Like, I've had a brownie mix. They do like a pumpkin bread thing in the fall. It's pretty good. It tastes a little bit more like processed to mm-hmm. me. Like, it's like everything's sifted too finely or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's just laziness in a way on my part that I would forget about it in my cupboard and never use it. And so it actually requires less effort for me just to whip something together from scratch, especially using this cookbook because it's so fast.
Okay. I want to talk about something funny that happened to our cookbook club, which is that a bunch of us were cooking out of this and a number of us had made the oatmeal chocolate chip cake
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't working for a lot of us. And so we were all saying like, what's going on with this oatmeal chocolate chip cake? The main issue was that it has chocolate chips studded through it, and they were just all sinking completely to the bottom. And some smart lady, Eliz, in our cookbook club just reached out to Yossi Arafi and said, this cake isn't working for me and a number of my friends. What's going on? And she said, I'm so sorry. They've actually misprinted one of the ingredients. It calls for a cup of whole milk. And really, you should only be putting a half a cup of whole milk.
Wow, what a difference.
So we all went through and like made the edit in our cookbooks. And I'm sure they're going to release another edition that has that fixed. But she was right.
Yeah.
It works much better if you only put a half cup of milk in it.
That was so nice that she responded to that. Because I think that every cookbook that comes out has typos in
it. Of course.
And that is like the most painful thing for the cookbook author when they see it. And they've worked so hard on those recipes. And then
totally.
To see it misprinted, that would just be such a pain in the butt.
So, you know, flip to that page, everyone, and update it. Wasn't her fault. That's a good one, too. I like that one. It's it has a lot of oats in it, and so it just feels like a little heftier,
mm-hmm.
but it's got those flavors of an oatmeal chocolate chip cookie.
That's what I really like about that whole grain strawberry cake is that it's not just, you're not always using all-purpose flour, that she does try to work in some different types of flours and grains, which makes it a little bit more interesting.
I agree. And on that one, she gives you an option too. Like, I think you can use a whole grain flour, you can use rye or barley flour or something like that. And it really does add like an undercurrent of flavor.
I have to say that is one thing that I really, really love about this cookbook in general is how flexible her recipes are. The book is laid out in a way where there's a short story at the beginning of the recipe. She's a very clear recipe writer, so you're not going to get too lost in the steps. But she also includes all of these different options for flavor variations, using another pan, how to dress up the cake. That has been just a godsend during pandemic life. If I'm making a cake and it's like, I don't have pineapple, but you could use a different kind of fruit. That has been awesome. And I get so much more use out of this book because I just need that apparently from the author to
right.
give me a little nudge. Like, here are some substitutions
right.
that are totally acceptable.
Right. I totally agree. I have the book laying open to the All the Spices cake, which I think I'm going to make today because it's a rainy day and I need some cake. And, you know, one of the flavor variations I see is that she's got a chai masala spice cake. So in that one, it has a few more spices in it. And that sounds amazing. Yes. And I've never made it that way before. So it's like a new recipe. Renee, how many of these cakes have you ever dressed up to take beyond a snacking cake and go somewhere else with it?
I would say about 25% of the cakes that I've made. Most of them just don't need it. And when I have made them, it hasn't really worked super well for me. And that's one of my criticisms of the book is just the glazes and icing section. The proportions don't work out for me right. And again, I'm not sure if that's user error or, you know, my powdered sugar is too compacted or who knows what. But I just know now whenever I make a glaze, I go extremely light on the liquid ingredients until I reach the desired consistency.
So you have to improv a little bit mm-hmm. with those.
Yeah. Otherwise, they turned out way, way too runny. And then I had to make so many adjustments to get them thickened mm-hmm. up, which is really hard to do after
yeah.
you've made that error.
Yeah. And then you end up making four times as much because
exactly.
you have to use the whole bag of powdered sugar to soak up all that milk or juice or whatever.
Yeah. I will make these fancy for myself on mm-hmm. like on a weekday. That tends to be when I bake the most from this cookbook, actually, is on the weeknight, which no modern baker feels like making a cake on a weeknight when
right.
you have small children and school schedules and stuff. But that is really when you want cake.
Right. I just kind of like to think that my kids are going to grow up and they're going to be like to other people, your mom didn't just home make a cake on a Wednesday night while she was making dinner.
The ease of this cookbook has really revolutionized the way that I bake in general, because I used to be more of a cookie baker because I have kids and it was just nice to have that much variety and you already have small portions ready for them for dessert. But I really have become much more of a cake baker now because of this cookbook, because it is so easy. And what used to bother me before about making cakes is, you know, you have all the frosting, you have the timing of
yeah.
like you have to wait for it to cool for a couple hours before you can frost it. And then you're left with twice as much cake as you really want.
Right.
And this book just solves all those problems.
Totally.
You don't need frosting and it only makes one, you know, 9-inch round cake, which is perfect.
Right. Yeah. If my family of four polishes off a snacking cake, nobody's like, oh my God, that was way too much cake.
It's also good for brunch, I would say, on the weekend, too. If you're thinking about making a quick bread, some of these cakes would be a really good alternative to
that. That's a great call.
I think of her lemony olive oil cake in particular, or the mostly apples cake that we've talked about.
Yeah, any of those with the fruit in them. Mm. There's a berry cream cheesecake that's really good. It's very, the cream cheese really like makes it a lot denser.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that would work well as sort of like a coffee cake alternative.
And really, coffee cake is not healthy. I mean,
right.
When you're thinking, if you have the illusion in your mind that like coffee cake and pound cake is somehow healthier than cake, then I'm sorry to break it to you, but it's
just
not.
Cake you're eating in the morning.
No judgment.
Yeah.
We all do it. It's
wonderful.
I'm
all for breakfast cake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do have a couple of tips for dressing them up that are not difficult, which is I think the glazes work really well for that. And I think you're right. You do have to keep a close eye on the liquid to sugar ratio in those glazes. But they have there's a really great glaze in here that's a strawberry glaze that you make with freeze-dried strawberries. And it's so beautiful because it's like hot pink.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we pull this book out, my son asks me, like, can we make the one with the hot pink on it? It's
oh,
just like
great.
So stunning that it's really attractive to him.
Do you pulverize the freeze-dried strawberries?
Yeah, exactly. And then you whisk them with the powdered sugar and then you add the liquid. And I can't remember what the liquid is. I think it might be orange juice.
Oh, okay.
It's really good. It's very sweet. It's like a real sweet tart addition to the top of the cake, which is really nice.
That sounds so good.
And I think in the book it exists on a passion fruit cake, which we've never made the passion fruit cake because I don't stock passion fruit.
You don't? There are so many recipes like that in this book where normally under different circumstances, I would be like, ooh, passion fruit cake. I'm going to make that this weekend. I'm going to add that to the grocery list. And then I'm going to have the time and space in my life to go to the grocery store whenever I want just for one thing. But unfortunately, with pandemic living, it's like, no, got to plan it out. Got to get the essentials.
Yep.
Like by the time, you know, my list is 100 things long and I'm never going to remember the passion fruit.
Right. Exactly. I also think that mini bundt cake is maybe my secret weapon to dressing any of these up because they just feel fancier if they're in a bundt form. One of my favorite glazes that I just made a couple of days ago is the cocoa glaze.
Ooh.
I thought it was so good and it was so, so easy. I feel like chocolate frosting or glaze in the past, like it's either always too chocolatey, too much like a cocoa powder flavor, or it's not. I mean, because a glaze doesn't usually have a lot of fat in it. So the way you make it is you whisk the powdered sugar and cocoa powder together, and then you add butter and boiling water, and the boiling water melts the butter. So you've got some fat in there, and then you whisk it together, and it was so good. Like, it was sweet enough that the cocoa wasn't like too biting, and it like spread really nicely. It was really smooth. I thought it was really good.
That sounds great. Was it shiny?
Yes.
Ooh. What cake did you put that on?
I put it on the vanilla cake, the buttermilk vanilla cake.
I bet that would be really good.
We went really simple.
On that almond butter banana cake.
Oh.
Even though I just said that I'm not a chocolate person.
Yeah. We made the vanilla in the bundt ring, and then we put this cocoa glaze on it. Actually, I shouldn't really take credit. I did do a lot of whisking, but my son made almost all of it. He was, you know, it was like kind of a homeschool project. So he was reading the recipe and, you know, doing all the measuring and everything. Really, he just needed my whisking skills because, you know, 7-year-olds, they don't have the elbow grease to really get that whisk going.
I bet my 9-year-old could make almost every recipe in this book.
I think it's a great book for a kid to do a baking project out of because it's simple. I mean, not all of them are super simple. Like, some of them have longer ingredient lists, but that vanilla cake, bing, bang, boom.
Or some of them you need to layer the fruit, or there's kind of a certain order that things have to be done. But yeah, it's like, as my kids get older over time, I'm like, what can you start doing for me?
Yes.
Making snacking cakes would be a wonderful addition. You know, Yossi Arafi has another book called Sweeter Off the Vine that I am excited to check out after working so much through the snacking cakes book. And I see her recipes pop up also in the New York Times.
Yeah, I think often. She's contributing quite a bit to them these days.
She actually made the fluffy pancake.
Those fluffy pumpkin pancakes.
Yeah, which we
cook
all the time.
I was on her blog, and this is old news because I haven't followed her blog before, but the top recipe on her blog was for a creme fraiche, no churn ice cream with blackberries in it.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, I got to go to the store right now. Yeah. I need to make this.
Oh, that's a good
one.
It
looked so good.
I need to start a thing on like my Google Calendar where every month at the beginning of the month, I just do like a recipe dump. And I'm like, here's all the recipes that you should make this month.
Right.
You know, so
that's
then
a great
you could
strategy.
Put that on July 1st so that when blackberries are in season, you have the perfect thing to use them for.
Right. Instead of going to the farmer's market and buying the blackberries and then being like, what am I?
Right.
I guess I'll just snack on them, which is a great option, but...
Yeah, I've also started to check off the recipes as I'm making them in a cookbook, too.
Yeah.
So that's something that is helpful for me because there are ones that I have tagged in here. The spiced honey cake, she has an option on that for adding blackberries. That would be a perfect summer cake. And so I just actually wrote in the table of contents next to spiced honey cake in caps, optional blackberry honey cake.
Yeah.
So that it calls my attention to it because she has so many good ideas for flavor variations on here. You know, if it's not screaming at me, I'm not going to realize that like, oh, I should flip to that page and I can use blackberries.
And there's great things buried in the little notes.
Who do you think this book is a good fit for?
Everyone.
Probably not someone who's gluten-free, although we have someone in Cookbook Club who's gluten-free, and I think she has not had a problem substituting gluten-free flour for any of the flour.
She's made this work.
Yeah.
Sorry, this just reminds me of, I was doing this ride on my Peloton the other day. It was a workout, and the guy, his name is Matty Majacomo, and he said, this workout is for everybody. If you love weightlifting and you love show tunes. I was like, do you know who everybody is? Because I think you just eliminated a wide swath of the population.
Wow.
I couldn't even get going because I was laughing so hard. My husband came and he's like, what? I'm like, you got to hear this. This workout is for everybody. If you love weightlifting and you love show tunes.
Well, I would say if you love weightlifting and show tunes, this book is for you. I would also say if you don't love those things, this book is for you.
Well, I think we've already said that this is a book that a competent child who has like maybe been around the kitchen a little bit could probably cook one of these without a lot of supervision.
Yeah. Older elementary age.
Yeah.
They're that simple.
Right. Easier to make than a batch of cookies, for sure.
Absolutely. So much faster.
It's not as if baking from this is going to take a lot of skill. So it might be a good thing for a beginning baker who hasn't done a lot of this stuff. And then also you could sort of level up with it because it has all these suggestions for how you can change things or try things a different way or dress them up. But also I think for parents, you know, we don't have a lot of extra time.
And we have a lot of cake eaters.
Yes, it's true. A lot of mouths to fill with cake. You know, I think it's good for somebody who's time crunched. but who still likes to bake and likes to have wonderful home-baked things. And man, these make your house smell so good, especially that warm and toasty section.
You know that I'm going to have to now bake from this also when I get home
I know.
Tonight.
That's what I did. I set us up for a snacking cake day.
I would say this book is not a great fit for someone who is really into elaborate baking in general. Like if you're looking for a cake book that's going to be like super challenging, really technical, like you want to push the boat out and have lots of components in your cake, this is not the cake for you.
Yeah.
But I would say like 99% of bakers are going to love this book.
Yes. Is it ever bad to have like a bunch of easy options for just like something to bang out?
No.
As a baker, I feel like there's a lot of times where I just want to like make something nice and sweet and simple, and 99% of my baking recipes on my cookbook shelf are just not going to fit into the time that I have available to do that. This is like the one I reach for.
I'm an acts of service,
okay,
love language person. Yeah. So I love doing things for other people and making people happy and giving people things, not gifts, but cake.
Right.
And other like things.
Who
that
doesn't
I've
love to receive cake,
yeah,
too? What a nice, thoughtful thing.
This would actually be great for a meal train, by the way, which we were just talking about the other day.
Yes.
But you could double the recipe and keep 1 9-inch for you and give 1 9-inch to someone who needs a little sweetness in their life.
Yes.
And that would be a very easy thing to bang out.
For sure.
Yeah. I love this book. It has definitely earned a spot on my cookbook shelf. Has it earned a spot on yours?
Oh, yeah. For sure. It's never leaving.
And I don't think I need to own another cake book, honestly. Like, it's done.
Right.
Great.
I do own other cake books, but they don't get nearly as much use as this one does.
We sure hope that you're going to join us next time when we cook from Dinner in an Instant by Melissa Clark. Bust out your Instant Pot and cook along with us.
Yes, please tag us on Instagram at Cookbook Club Show or send us a voice memo or a comment at cookbookclubshow@gmail.com. You can find us online at cookbookclub.show.
Remember to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss the next one. And leaving us a review really helps other home cooks find us too.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.